Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 33 of the Attractions Podcast. I'm Banks.
And I'm Brittany.
And we're here to give you the rundown of the latest happenings from attractionsmagazine.com over the past week and in our lives in general. So, Brittany, how's that quarantine life going over there in Austin?
It's going. I started The Last of Us Remastered Edition.
Yeah, so I saw you tweeting about that.
I've been playing it pretty much all day for the past 2 days. It was $20. I was like, yeah, I want to pick that up.
That's a good deal.
They I don't know if you pay attention to the gaming news as much, but they found the people that leaked huge portions, like spoilery parts of the new game.
I saw about that.
Because of that, they announced a release date. Comes out in June. I think it's June 19th. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, I've never played that game. I watched PewDiePie play it back when it came out in like 2003,
oh, wow.
A long time ago, but I don't remember anything. So I was like, I'm going to play it. And it was $20 at Best Buy. So I was like, that's a good $20 well spent.
I've heard it's one of the best games made.
It's really great so far. I'm really loving it. I have died a handful of times now. Parts of it are really difficult. I try to be sneaky, but then they notice me sneaking and then I have to go like guns blazing. But I'm trying. And then Josh is playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey because the trailer for Valhalla came out this past mm-hmm. week. Mm-hmm. And it looks incredible, the new one.
I've never played any Assassin's Creed.
I used to play the old ones, like 1, 2, Brotherhood, those. And then I just stopped playing them for some reason. But they're very history-based. And they all take place in different eras of history. And it's very researched and really rich. And it's just, they're so good if you're a big history person.
Yeah, Brian, in our YouTube live chat here, saying that Last of Us is soon to be an HBO show.
And that's what I've been thinking about the entire time I've been playing. Like, who would they cast to play Joel and Ellie? I really want Dylan McDermott to be Joel. Because he's like a dead ringer for him. He's really great with emotional heavy material. And I really just don't want Hugh Jackman to get cast as everything. Pick someone else.
Tom Hanks. Man can do no wrong.
Oh my gosh, he would have to grow like full facial hair and lower his voice like 3 octaves.
I'm not very familiar with the game, but I remember I saw you mentioning in Twitter that the game actually starts where you're living now in Austin. So how is the town represented fairly well?
In terms
of the layout?
In the very beginning, because where Joel lives at the start of the game, he lives in Austin. And at one point, you're traveling through a downtown area that looks kind of like 6th Street. But it's not like there aren't specific places that you'd be like, oh, this is on 6th, but it looks like 6th.
Okay.
Which I thought was really cool because when I watched it 7 years ago, I had no idea where the beginning of that part of the game took place. And now it's kind of cool that it's here. The rest of the game doesn't take place in Texas, but
it's a traveling kind of game.
Yeah.
Speaking of video games, and been playing a lot of Animal Crossing. We'll get to that later in our Animal Crossing corner. but I picked up, because I never got to play this game, and I saw that they have the remastered version on Switch, but I picked up Ghostbusters.
Oh, do you like it?
I haven't gotten a chance to actually sit down and play it because even though I bought it and downloaded it, I've been spending way too much time on Animal Crossing and keep forgetting to go over there. But I'm very much looking forward to playing that. I also got Resident Evil 4 because it's one of my favorite video games of all time. I remember playing it when it first came out on the Nintendo GameCube but years and years ago. So I was like, oh, it's great to have this again. And a lot of the Resident Evil games are on the Switch, which I'm excited about revisiting and replaying again once I get those, because I'm a huge fan of that video game series.
Same. I wasn't allowed to play them as a kid because my mom thought that they were too violent and scary, but my dad played them all the time, and I remember we had the first one in like the CD jewel case.
Oh my
for
God,
PlayStation
yeah.
1, and yes. I have like the scary zombie guy where he's like, on the front.
The one that used like real video for like the opening cinematics, right?
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, that's like a plucked from my childhood memories right there.
I hope in the future somehow they're able to bring in the remakes of 2 and 3 to the Switch, because they're the only two games that are really missing now from the main storyline, because they've got 0, 1, 4, 5, 6, and 7. They don't have 7 yet on Switch, I don't think.
I honestly don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're similar to port like the other games. I don't see why it would be that hard to port.
Now, that's pretty much been my week, is just playing Animal Crossing, playing video games, and just, you know, spending time at home, not really doing much. Can't really do anything. Every now and then I'll take the kids out in the car and we'll just go drive around and do thing, like just drive around. All we can do to get out of the house. I think sometime this week we're probably going to drive down to Lake Wells and go visit Spook Hill in person for the first time. We featured it on the attraction show a couple weeks ago. Our friend Mark sent us video of it. So we're thinking about driving down there, because it's not too far from Legoland and Bok Tower. So it'd be a nice little way to stay in the car and get out of the house.
We've been doing that too, taking walks in the neighborhood and drives. We went grocery shopping. But most of the time, it's just like getting up, getting dressed, watching TV, working, playing a game, getting tired of that game, playing something else, doing Ring Fit.
We need to print out our race bibs and start doing our virtual 5Ks with Run Disney that we signed up for. So that's probably something that we're going to start doing in the next week or two.
I should have done that, because you can jog with Ring Fit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it has a jogging feature where you can run through the various levels and you don't have to do anything with the actual ring, but you can just jog, and it measures your activity rates and your heart rate and everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, should have done that.
You could always still go out and do it, just not part of an event.
Right, but the medals.
The medals are cool. I can't wait till they come in. I'll show them off whenever they get in. Speaking of medals, I got one back here from when I did the half marathon last year for Star Wars. Our Raylo on there.
Raylo forever.
Speaking of which, I don't think it's in our, no, it's not in our news, but tomorrow the complete Skywalker saga arrives on Disney Plus with episode 9, so you can see all 9 episodes all you want. Although I think for some people in here, it may just be 8.
Eight is my Star Wars and Clone Wars. I like that too. Don't say anything about Clone Wars. I haven't watched all of it yet. I started it though.
I was going to say, like, tomorrow is the finale, and they have a big episode on Friday. So yeah, don't.
It's already out in some places.
The finale?
I think New Zealand got it because it's past midnight over there already.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because people were like, don't search the hashtag on Twitter. Spoilers everywhere. And I'm like,
I'm sure that, you know, there are definitely probably are spoilers in terms of how some characters make it out, because we know Order 66 is going to happen. Ahsoka and Rex will live, because these are all been well established in other shows. It's just how that's going to be the big thing. And if there's any other surprises going to be thrown in. I'm excited to see how they end this whole show.
Same. I think after this, we might go watch a handful of them and then get up in the morning and watch them and try to finish it up and watch the last one tomorrow, just so we don't get spoiled.
Right.
You know, everyone's going to be talking about it.
Exactly. And I think we got a little Star Wars to talk about in a little bit. So let's go ahead and dive right into our news in the queue.
Well, while the parks have been closed, one of the parks celebrated a birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
And it's our favorite park. Hollywood Studios turned 31 this past week. And to celebrate the new Walt Disney World, President Josh D'Amaro kind of shared a sad but like very nice video of the park empty. And they turned the music on after being off for a month. And it was very, like, somber, but kind of nice at the same time.
It was very, very nice. I know a lot of BGM, background music, you can find on YouTube for a lot of the lands and parks. But it was just something about, you know, seeing shots of Hollywood Studios and hearing the music as the natural sound again, it just gave me chills and makes me really miss and really wish I could have been there for the anniversary. Because for as long as I can remember, every May 1st, I'm always at Hollywood Studios for the anniversary. It's something I've never missed except for this year now. So it's, it's sad. And Hollywood Studios is the last park I went to before everything closed down. So it'll be the first park I go to when it reopens. Yes, Kat, Hollywood, my fellow Hollywood Studios stan. Yes.
I thought her picture was like her doing this, and I was like, yeah, Hollywood. What?
Yeah. for those, and I forgot to mention it at the top of the show, but for those listening to the audio version, you're going to hear us referencing people in our YouTube live chat. You can join us every Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on youtube.com/attractionsmagazine to see a live video version of us recording the podcast. So if you want to come and interact with us while we're recording, drop on in every Sunday night. Hollywood Studios anniversary 31. At least it wasn't the 30th, because the 30th is a big anniversary, and we got to experience that, luckily.
Yeah, so I will be back soon. Don't know when, but soon. I'm not wearing a studio shirt. I probably should have.
Nothing can stop us now. Well, except for one thing.
Yeah, that one thing sure does stop you. Yeah. All right, next up. A new Star Wars show comes out tomorrow on Disney Plus, and I got to watch the first two episodes.
Okay, so yes, Brittany, you got to review these. I got to review prop culture. We'll talk about that later. Was it not the whole 8-episode series, or was it only just the first two?
The first two. They're going weekly with this one. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So the first episode will come out on May 4th, which is tomorrow. And then the second episode will come out on Friday. And then I believe every subsequent episode will come out on Fridays.
Okay. And for those wondering, we're talking about the new show, Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, which is a look behind the scenes at The Mandalorian. So Brittany, as someone who saw every episode of The Mandalorian, what'd you think of this behind the scenes look?
It made me want to watch The Mandalorian again.
I mean, that's a perfect thing to do. Everyone should do that.
The episodes focus on singular topics in regards to behind the scenes stuff with The Mandalorian. Like, the first episode is directing. So Jon Favreau, the executive producer of the show, had everyone sit at a round table and kind of discuss what brought them to the project, what excited them, what it meant to them, and kind of go over each one individually and kind of explore their two episodes that they got to do and kind of explore their thought process behind all of it. And the second episode was about legacy and how the show kind of addresses the legacy of Star Wars and how the directors kind of take hold of that and use it to create something new while still honoring what's past. And that episode in particular has an incredible, like, 5-10 minute discussion and analysis from Dave Filoni that I think every Star Wars fan should watch.
Okay.
It's literally like listening to him, I was just like, yes,
he gets it. I mean, Dave Filoni is probably one of if you were to take someone like George Lucas, he's probably like the head honcho for anything Star Wars these days in terms of like story and keeping that legacy alive.
And I think what's so exciting about this show in particular is all of these directors, each one of them, they just get it, man. They just, they understand Star Wars. They understand the importance of mythology and story and what George brought before them. And they all have such reverence for the history. And they understand the weight that's on their shoulders. It's not just, oh, I'm making a Star Wars movie because I love Star Wars. It's like, I'm applying history to this thing that people will watch in 20 years. And it will be something that kids now show their kids in the future. And it's just incredible to hear them talk about it and understand it. And I even got a mention of Joseph Campbell, who is like the philosopher behind the hero's journey. And how they studied it with this show. And I was like, yeah.
Now, that's one of the questions I had about this show, because The Mandalorian itself, season one, is at 8 episodes, and this show is 8 episodes. So my assumption was that each episode would be about the subsequent episodes. Like episode one would be about episode one, but it's actually like each episode of the Disney Gallery has a theme instead of just analyzing one specific episode.
Right. So they will cover the entire season, multiple episodes, and just kind of examine it as a whole in these various topics. So future topics will be like technology used in the show, creatures, the cast will be involved in another episode, and it'll span the entire first season.
Okay, that's cool. I like that idea. Instead of just doing episode by episode, trying to cover everything in one episode, you just pick one subject and cover the whole season. I like that idea. And someone in our YouTube chat here, Brian, actually asked, what is the runtime for each episode?
It's just under 30 minutes, so you could easily plow through episodes if they release them all at once. Or if you waited till Friday, then you would have two to watch. But I think one thing that I hope viewers will take away from this is that at least two, if not three or more, of the people on the director's roundtable are working on future Star Wars projects, allegedly.
That's right. And yeah, because Taika is one of them, right?
That one's not confirmed, but Deborah Chow is working on Kenobi.
That's right, yes.
And I don't know about the rest of you guys out there in the internet, but as someone who did not like episode 9 and felt very jaded about Star Wars, this made me excited about Star Wars and its future and the people in charge of it, because you want these people figuring out Star Wars in the future.
Which, you know, this is great. Obviously, episode 9... and even episode 8, very polarizing with fans for very many different reasons. So now that that whole Skywalker saga is done and people's expectations are gone, we're not expecting anything anymore in terms of story. This is the perfect time for these directors to come in and establish their own stories and their own styles and bring Star Wars to life in their own way without a big expectation of what characters should be doing by what the fans think. So I think this is going to be a great thing for the future of Star Wars.
I'm very excited, and I'm extremely excited to see what people think when they watch it, because this is going to spark so much discussion. I have no doubt, because a lot of the show is just talking over BTS footage about different aspects of the show and how they challenge Mando by giving him a task that he never thought he would encounter being a father. And it's just, it's incredible. It's so good. I love Disney Plus's nonfiction original programming. And this is just another gem in the crown. It's
Good. Wholeheartedly agree. And Brian in our YouTube chat here has a great suggestion. His prediction, the final episode may have a sneak peek of season 2.
I sure hope so.
I could see that happening because season 2 is already shot.
Yeah.
So they could... they could wholeheartedly start showing maybe concept art or even some like footage from season 2 at the end of the series. I hope that's the case.
Well, if things are still on track, it's supposed to come out in October. But we'll see. They're already in pre-production for season 3. So here's hoping.
Because I know a lot of people are still able to work at home in terms of editing. So maybe they have a team that can work on the show from their homes. That's a possibility.
Maybe. I mean, if there are any, like Josh at work, you can see this giant, there it is. I had to figure out where to point. This giant tablet he brought in from work. So maybe they just brought all their editing bay stuff home. They're like,
it's entirely possible. We could still see a season 2 on time in October, which I would absolutely love.
I hope so, because everything else got pushed back. I don't think we're going to see... I think Kenobi got pushed back to 2022 or something. And
as long as it still happens.
Yeah, it's still happening, but we're just going to have to wait a little longer.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
All right, some Universal Orlando updates. Got two of them for you. The first one is that they are Universal Orlando at large is now testing the temperatures of all team members and business visitors. So like vendors and they would basically be the green ID at Disney.
Like those construction workers and things like that. Yeah.
That come into the property, checking their temperature. And if it exceeds 99.9, then they will be asked to leave the property and not return for 72 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is sort of a thing that they've been doing now in China and Japan with their theme parks for a few weeks now, in terms of checking temperatures of their employees and even their guests who want to visit the parks, that they're slowly trying to reopen. So I'm not surprised that we're starting to see something like that here. If I'm not mistaken, this is probably the first theme park in America to start doing this.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, there are some places that are insisting on taking the temperatures of guests. I just read an article today about movie theaters in Austin, not including Alamo Drafthouse, because they're not choosing to reopen yet. We'll be taking temperature via infrared thing.
Mm-hmm.
And guests will have to have a temperature below 100.4 and will have to wear masks the entire time they're at the theater. And then they have to answer questions about if they've exhibited symptoms, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting time. There's going to be a lot of new procedures that we're not used to that are going to start being implemented. And it seems like this is going to be the what Universal is doing is the start of what we're probably going to see more regularly with other places as things start to try to reopen. Because I know Texas and Florida were currently basically in a phase one reopening with a lot of businesses. And so, yep. So we're going to see a lot more people out and about and definitely a lot more face masks for sure, which I highly recommend if you're listening or watching. If you have to go out, please wear a mask. We've got one. If I go to Target, they get some essentials. I'm wearing a face mask. In fact, our Target, you can't even go in without a face mask.
Mine's over there.
There you go. Yeah. So a lot of businesses probably won't even let you in if you're not wearing one. So just, you know, have one ready. Actually, I think we're going to be talking about face masks here in a minute. Yeah. But we got another story to get to first. So let's talk about that. What else is Universal talking about?
One more thing attached to this Universal thing. Yes. Tom Williams, the chairman and CEO of Universal Parks and Resorts, said that the resort will strongly encourage and in some cases require many team members to wear masks. So when the parks do reopen, that might be something you see on the regular. So prepare yourself for it. I know a lot of people think that that takes the magic out of it or whatever, but we are beyond a point where magic applies.
Yeah. I think we talked about that last week.
We did.
And our thoughts on that. And yeah, this is essential, people. We gotta, if we're going to get out and about, the best way to not have another, you know, spike in cases is you got to wear the face masks. And Rodney, I know Rodney mentioned this last week too,
yep.
But you know, temperature check is nice, but if you have symptoms, if you have it, you could not be showing symptoms. Right. And that's where the face masks come in. It's just going to be, you need to wear the face mask just to be on the safe side. Yeah. And someone mentioned last week too, and I always think about this every time we talk about it, is, you know, summer coming up and especially humidity here in Florida, like you're going to be sweating, you're going to be hot and you're not even sick and you may produce a temperature over 100, but just because it's humid, like how are they going to figure that out? Who knows?
They would probably go, well, I think they would ask you questions like, have you been in contact with anyone who's been sick in the last 2 weeks? Have you felt sick in the last 2 weeks? And then take your temperature and then make a decision based upon that.
Right.
Brian has an interesting comment in here.
Yeah, I see that. Face characters. So are they going to have to wear masks? And what I'm thinking is they may not even have character meet and greets.
That's what I'm thinking too. I think they might just eliminate those close contact encounters for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. It's going to be a whole different theme park experience once the parks decide to start reopening. So we'll of course report on all that when things are officially announced and officially start opening. But until then, this just is all speculation and hearsay.
Yep. Next up, Epic Universe construction is now delayed because they have halted construction. This update was shared during a Comcast earnings call last week. I listened to it. And they basically said that they've stopped construction for now. The park was originally supposed to open in 2023. There's no telling for sure if that will be adjusted or not. It depends on how long they halt construction, I guess.
Right. So, it could have been early 2023, and now we're looking at late 2023. At this point, right. we just don't know.
They never were specific about the opening season. And right. This is important because prior to this announcement, Universal stressed that construction would remain active at all of the parks that they're working on. So Beijing, Tokyo, Japan, California, and in Florida. And
We still don't know about the Jurassic Park construction yet. I don't know if they're still continuing with the roller coaster construction there. Supposed roller coaster. I mean, it's all but confirmed at this point. But an interesting fact about this, though, is that even though Epic Universe is delayed, reports are that construction workers are back over in Beijing, hard at work on that park. That is still on track. And in fact, I think I saw a statistic saying that the amount of construction workers there now, as opposed to before the outbreak, is almost double. So they're like really hitting it hard now.
They confirmed that during the call too, that they have more construction workers there now than they did when they first started. And Comcast said that they expect the park to be on time and on budget, which they threw in there for sure, in 2021. So we can still expect to see that next year. They also said that Super Nintendo World at Universal Studios Japan will probably open a few months past their original predicted period, which was supposed to be around the 2020 Summer Olympics.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about that. They're probably going to look for a fall opening now. With that one. But I can't wait for Beijing. Like, I saw photos from the park a day or two ago on Twitter of construction progress, and like Transformers area looks great. It looks exactly like Hulk at Islands of Adventure. Photos I saw from their Jurassic World section, because they're going to be the first park to have a full blown Jurassic World land, not just Jurassic Park. The aviary coaster looks so cool. And this is what I wanted to talk to you about, Brittany. This is a little off topic of what we've been talking about, but did you see the photos?
I saw you send them. I saw the Transformers one.
Okay.
And I've seen like concept art for the park before.
Okay. So we know that the Jurassic World section is going to have that aviary coaster and a dark ride. And we've been trying to figure out what's this dark ride going to be. What type of ride is it going to be? The photos shared show that it is indeed another boat ride. Now, I'm not sure if it may be a boat ride that's a smaller boat ride, but the boats looked almost identical to the ones you would find in Florida and Hollywood and Japan. But it's obviously a different building in and of itself, and it's all indoors from what we can tell from permits and concept art and things like that. So I'm curious how big it's going to be if it is indeed a boat ride that's entirely indoors.
Do you think they're going to basically port the boat ride over here to there?
Or
do you
think
they'll get something different?
I need to see more photos of the outside of the show building for that ride, because obviously like the drop for the River Adventure is big. It's like, I think it's around 80 something feet tall. So the show building, if they're going to completely house it indoors, is going to have to be pretty big to house that drop.
Yeah.
So who knows at this point, who knows?
Also inside the whole thing, could you imagine that ride being all indoors? If they did that,
the stuff they could do would be insane, because you don't have to worry about the elements.
You could have things flying over your head, or like water droplets coming from the ceiling to like freak you out.
We could actually have some really good Indominus Rex.
Yeah, man. We'll have to keep an eye on that.
Yes.
All right. Next up. This kind of rocked everyone's world last week. Disney is now selling cloth face masks on Shop Disney for guests.
Yes. I know some people in the chat were talking about that.
These masks, there are six different styles. You can get Star Wars themed, Marvel themed, Disney character mouth theme, which is very Tokyo Disney to me. Mm-hmm. Some Pixar themed ones, princess themed ones, and then classic Mickey Minnie themed ones. And they come in packs of four, and they are available in varying sizes. I think it's extra small to large.
I think it's just small, medium, large.
Okay. And they are $19.99 a piece. Well, $19.99 for a pack of four.
Right. Which for us, like I was looking into it, all of us have different sizes. So Oliver would have to get a small, Spencer would have to get medium, and then Sydney and I would have to get large. And I just couldn't justify spending at least $60+ on masks for all of us. So we're going to skip out on this one. But I mean, it's cute. Do you have the statistic in front of you of like what they're doing in terms of donations with the mask?
Yes. To help those in need, Disney is going to be donating 1 million of their face masks to children, families, and underserved and vulnerable communities across the country. Mm-hmm. And they will be distributed by MedShare. And Disney will also donate all profits, 100% of the profits from the sales in the U.S. of the cloth masks to MedShare, up to $1 million between now and September 30th.
Which is great. I mean, that's great on Disney to do that. The masks themselves they don't expect to send them out till June. I think was the time frame for delivery. So it is a bit of a wait to get them. So if you don't really have any other options, or if you like the designs, wholeheartedly, definitely go with these masks. Personally, though, I'm going to stick to supporting small businesses and smaller Etsy shops and people who are having trouble keeping afloat during all this time because, you know, the businesses are closed. The masks seem more personable there and more design options. So that's what I'm going to do. But I mean, I'm not knocking Disney at all. I think right. Disney, it's great that they're doing this and the donations are amazing. It's just a little too expensive for my taste and taking a little too long to get to you.
Yeah, I think because Josh and I both shopped small and got our masks from a local shop in Austin that donated all the proceeds to an organization that's helping people who are supposed to come for South by Southwest. And that is some people's like 3-4 months of livelihood that's gone. So we did that. And one of the things that I love about their masks is they have adjustable ear straps that you can shorten or tighten to fit your head better. Don't have that. And there's no second pocket for a filter if you wanted to put one in your mask.
Yeah.
And I don't like that they're selling them in packs of single sizes and not letting you do like a family pack where it's like one of each.
That's exactly why we're not doing it, because we'd have to buy 4 for Oliver, 4 for Spencer, and then Sydney and I would have the same size. So, it would be cool if you could pick and choose the sizes you want in your 4-pack. That would be neat. But, you know, it is what it is.
So I have to ask. Because this is happening, what do you think they're leading to here with these? Could we see the parks reopen in a time where you have to wear your mask to the park, so they want you to wear Disney ones? Could we see them selling masks in the park at the front gift shops and things? You know?
I guarantee you they're going to start selling masks in the parks whenever they decide to reopen. That is going to be a possibility because who knows? Not everyone will either have the ability to get a mask before they come here, or, you know, if they have one, maybe, you know, something happens to it and they need to get a new one. The parks are definitely going to want to be able to give guests the options of buying one. Of course, they'll probably be marked up a little bit because, you know, it's the theme parks. It is what it is. But I could see Disney totally doing the parks masks and even having like maybe special designs in the parks. Like if you want to get a Dole Whip mask, you can only get it at Magic Kingdom or something like that. Who knows? I mean, this is all, you know, we're spitballing blue sky ideas here. But yeah, I mean, it could be Disney starting to think we might be reopening soon. Let's get some masks going out there. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, and there is kind of like a convenience with selling 4 in a pack, because like with my mask, you have to wash it after every use and you can't dry it. You have to hang dry it.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
Like I go out to the store once. Okay. I take it off. I put it in the washing machine and then I have to let it hang dry the entire next day. So I can't use it. So having more than one would be helpful in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just going like one day to the parks and all 4 of you need masks, that's where it can kind of get a little tricky.
DJJS in our YouTube chat says this is going to be a new trend, like the mini ear band. I could honestly see that happening because I don't, here's kind of my assumption with face masks. I think it's definitely going to be a necessity once things start reopening that you're going to need it. I think for safety's sakes, you're going to probably want to wear it through the end of the year. I don't see the face masks really going away quickly. It's because I think Japan and China, even well before this, you know, a lot of their people still were wearing face masks. And so I could start seeing that happening here too, even after this is all over.
in Japan, it's like a courtesy thing. Like, yeah, if you're sick, you wear it so you don't get others sick. Not necessarily to protect yourself, but to protect others. Mm-hmm. I could honestly see this kind of change the fabric of how people act when they're sick, and masks just might become a thing forever. I don't know.
Then you got your collectible masks and your annual pass holder mask and your matching mask and magic band.
Can you imagine an AP mask with like that yellow orange color and like the Mickey right there?
Instead of the courtesy magnets, you're going to have courtesy face masks now.
Oh my gosh. Honey, our new magic bands came in and we got masks with them.
Rose gold and all that stuff. Yeah, exactly.
There was one small shop I saw on Instagram who's been making like avant-garde face masks, mm-hmm. and they had sequins on the front, and there was another one that had tassels hanging down from it. So if you're looking for a mask and the Disney offerings aren't really what you're looking for, look into small shops. Try to support local small businesses and help these people out.
Exactly. All right. So what is next?
Animal Crossing Corner.
There we go. So our new weekly segment where we talk Animal Crossing, now that I am sucked in and wholeheartedly committed to this little game. So what was, I know you've been playing Last of Us, but have you had any progress in your island?
Okay. Listen, the most exciting thing that I did this week was one of my friends moved out, Flo the penguin. She left. So I had an empty spot, and I don't know if you know who Raymond is. He's one of the newer characters in the game. They added in like 8 new villagers to the 457 that are currently in existence.
Okay.
And he's a cat that wears glasses, and he's got that disorder where you have 2 different colored eyes. He has a brown eye and a green eye.
Okay.
Are you looking him up?
No, I'm looking up something else because I want to remember something that happened to me, but. Go ahead.
the only way you can get him is if he shows up in your campsite, which is random. It doesn't happen often. Or you go on mystery island tours when you have an empty plot and you keep going to islands until you find him, and then you can ask him to move in.
Okay.
So I knew that Flo was moving basically 2 days in advance, because the way that they move, they'll think about it, and then you'll see them thinking. They'll have a little thought bubble above their head. Then you go talk to them, and then they'll ask you if they should move, and you'll say yes or no. And then the next day, they'll be in boxes, and then the next day, they'll be gone, and then their plot will be open. So I had those 2 days, and I grinded for 20,000 or 40,000 Nook Miles.
Oh, my God.
And I spent it all on Nook Miles tickets. And I spent like 2 hours yesterday going to Mystery Islands trying to find Raymond, and I didn't find him.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh, man.
And this is the same villager that people are selling on eBay for real money. Like hundreds of dollars real money.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. No, I'm totally serious. People are selling them on Facebook groups for like 100,000 Nook Miles tickets. Or you can buy him for real money, and it's like $100, $300. Let's see. I'm trying to find the most expensive one just to be outrageous. But there's here you can get him for $20, $50, $10, $30, $100.
There's so much like dealing with this game in terms between turnips and shooting stars and now villagers. Like, there's a whole black market in this game.
Well, this particular thing, buying villagers on like eBay or Etsy, is against Nintendo's terms of service, and if they catch you doing it, they delete your account.
Oops.
So I went to various islands. I saw Julian the unicorn. I saw one of the new villagers. I think her name is Renee. She's a horse, and her name is spelled exactly like you think it's spelled. Renee.
Good night.
And I couldn't find him. So on my last ticket, I saw a villager named Ursula. She's a bear. And I was just like, whatever. I don't want Tom Nook to bring an Uggo to my island. So I
told
her she could come. But I spent a long time searching, and I ended up, because every time I would go to an island, I would look for fossils. I would shake the trees to get the one item, and I would try to catch any bugs or fish I didn't have. And right. I ended up finishing with like 10 fossils.
Nice.
And at least 10 to 15 single items that I could sell at the Nooks. So it wasn't all bad. I was disappointed. Next time I'm going to be more prepared and have like 100 Nook Miles tickets. So I'm saving up now, but that was the most exciting thing I did in the game this week because I've been so focused on Last of Us.
It was a big week for me. So I finally got up to a 3-star and we had a performance by the KK Slider dog.
Oh, yay.
And so now I'm in the process of finally doing terraforming in the game. So I'm doing paths and I've kind of started reworking waterways. I'm trying to get enough Nook Miles now to unlock the cliffs and terraforming those. And, you know, just kind of trying to put order to our island now. A friend of mine out in California last night, actually, she had some shooting stars for her island. So I got to fly over to her island and watch the shooting stars. And I got about 35.
Oh, wow.
Wishes and so 35 little stars in the next morning. So that was nice. So I finally got some of those, got some turnips today. I've got 2,600 turnips. So this will be a fun week of trying to find an island that's selling them for pretty high. I hate how much I'm into this game now. Well,
tell them what I helped you get last week.
Yes. Yeah, so Brittany knows of a Twitch user who regularly sells pretty high. So she helped me be able to go and get about 800,000 bells off what I bought last week. So I'm hoping for more this week, because this week I got over 3 times as many turnips as I did last week. So this should be a good week, hopefully.
Well, if you so the Twitch user that I follow, she'll open up her island and she uses random.org to set her turnip prices. It's technically cheating through a save editor, but it's random. So you never know if it's going to be a high price or a low price. But last week her prices were 813 or something. So if you sell at least 800, you will make 2,080,000 bells off of what you bought this week. So
that would be great.
I bought 8,000 turnips. I bought 2 pockets full again.
Nice, nice. I didn't expect to fill up my pockets so quickly, but yeah, it is what it is. Look, luckily, because my island was selling at 108. Sydney's was luckily at 94. So I just went over her island and bought my turnips from her. But I wasn't expecting to fill up my pockets, so I could have bought more, but I didn't want to fly back and forth.
That's okay. I usually I use an app called ACNH Exchange, and it's basically just an app where people set dodo codes, and they open their island for an entrance fee or for free, and they're like, oh, Daisy May is selling for 90 bells. Come get it. I'll be open for 2 hours, and you get in line and you wait until it's your turn. Kind of like how the stream did that you were in last week where you sold. And I went to 2 different islands and bought full pockets at 90 bells a piece.
Nice. Hello to Vinod in our chat here saying hi to me and Brittany. Hello to you, sir. So what I caught a rare dragonfly.
Oh yeah,
a banded dragonfly.
I still need that one. That's a new May bug. The bugs are not year round, so you only get certain ones every month, and sometimes they'll leave after a month, and sometimes they'll be there for 3 months. So you only get one shot most of the time for a year to catch that particular bug.
And I missed getting a tarantula because they just switched from tarantula to scorpion. The last night before it switched, I found a tarantula finally, and I didn't see it coming, and it bit me. So I missed it, unfortunately. I think Sydney got an extra, so I might have her give me one so I can at least have it in my museum. But the scorpion, God, every time I like encounter it, I have a heart attack.
They're scary. Have you ever gotten Tarantula Island on the mystery tours?
Never did. I'm assuming there's a Scorpion Island.
Depending on what's in season, it will either be Tarantula Island or Scorpion Island. If you have a friend, though, who is in the Southern Hemisphere right now, they have tarantulas now. They had scorpions before. Maybe put out a tweet that's like, hey, anyone playing in the Southern Hemisphere, let me come over after 7 p.m. to catch a tarantula.
Right.
But
it's those little buggers, man, they're relentless. Like, when they start chasing you, they don't let up.
Tarantula Island is scary. So it's one island, and then there's a moat around a block of land, and you get on that land, and it's covered in weeds and rocks and trees, and there are at least 4 tarantulas spawned on that piece of land at all times. So you have to catch them without irritating the other ones to make them come and attack you while you're doing the catch animation. Most of the time you do, and then as soon as you catch one bites you. So it's definitely scary. But you make a lot
nightmares.
Of money.
Oh, no, I'm sure you do, but that's nightmare fuel to me.
Because I think also in the summer there's a big fish island, so you get like sharks and marlin and stuff like that. I think the sharks come in June, but what I've been doing is if I get tarantula or scorpion island, or I get lots of big fish while I'm out on tours, I save them and then I wait for CJ or Flick to come to my island, and then I sell those particular bugs and fish to hit them.
Because they buy double.
One and a half.
One and a half. Oh, well, still more than the Timmy and Tommy will ever buy your stuff from.
Because today it was raining on my island, and somehow I caught 2 coelacanths. 2 of them?
Really? I've only caught 1.
I caught 2, and I don't know how it happened, but I did. So they're sitting in my front lawn waiting for CJ to come.
Hurry up, CJ. So yeah, Sydney and I are head deep into this game now, and we love it so much. I'm trying to play Ghostbusters for the first time, but every time I open my Switch, I gotta check on my island, and then 4 hours later I'm still doing it. So
it's such an incredible time suck. Like, can you you dive in, you're like, oh, I'm just gonna do my chores, you know, go find all 4 fossils and like water all my flowers and stuff, and then it's 3 hours later, you haven't moved. And someone, actually, Gus Sorolla from Rooster Teeth tweeted, I think it was today or yesterday, that this game will be looked upon in history years from now at how historically like important it was at this time for people playing the game and everything.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what that's like, its cultural significance, like 5 years after all of this finishes up.
Yeah, exactly. We'll still be playing it too, I'm sure.
You bet.
All right, so now it's time to move on to our main attraction for this week. And this week we are diving back into Disney Plus because a new series dropped this past Friday. It is called Prop Culture, and it is all about the art of making props and costumes for the movies. Lanigan is the host, and he is a prop collector himself. And he's going through each episode is focusing on one movie. And so he's going and he's either finding lost artifacts. He's reuniting costume pieces and prop pieces with people involved with the films, from actors, designers and technicians and things like that, directors. And it's just so cool. Each episode is around 30 minutes in length, so you can knock out a whole binge of 8 episodes in one day easily.
I did that.
Exactly. No, same. When you start watching it, you are hooked immediately. Like, the pace is perfect. It's energetic. It keeps going and rolling, and it is surprisingly emotional.
There is also some surprising parts in it, like stuff that I was just like my jaw was on the floor.
Yeah. Shocked. Yeah. If you've read my review on Attractors Magazine, you see how much I love this show. After 2 viewings of the whole series now, it's in my top 2 shows on Disney Plus, right behind Mandalorian, wholeheartedly. It probably is my favorite non-scripted Disney Plus show. And then Mando will be my favorite scripted fictional show. It is just so good. And it's the potential for more seasons is there because there's so many movies in Disney's catalog that you could touch upon. The oldest one they touch upon is Mary Poppins. And then I think the most recent one they touch upon. Let me actually pull up my
I think it's
cheat sheet here.
Either Pirates or Narnia.
Let's see. I'm looking at the episode titles right now. So, yeah, I would probably say Pirates or Narnia. I can't remember which one came out first.
I think they were around the same time, though.
Yeah.
I think Pirates was 03.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Let's see. Pirates of the Caribbean. Curse of the Black Pearl was 2003. And then Chronicles of Narnia. I can't read.
We're looking up movie release dates right now.
Movies. The first one was 2005. So The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was technically the most recent movie that they
Yes. Did. But yeah, I really hope, and I think that they probably will do more seasons of this show because there really is so much you can dive into. And for those that are watching and listening, we're going to do a bit of a deep dive into this series, and we're going to talk about each episode. So even though it is a reality show, there will be spoilers. So there be warned. There's one spoiler I'm very excited to talk about. I know Brittany knows exactly what I'm thinking right now.
There were two things that I was shocked by in this series, and they are spoiler worthy. So yes. If you don't want to do that, skip ahead like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, because we're going to talk about each one in order. So the first episode we'll talk about here is episode 101, which would be Mary Poppins. And boy, for this being the first episode, it starts out strong. It just grabs you by the emotional cord and doesn't let go.
Man, Richard Sherman playing in Health Office literally tore me up. And it's so simple what they did. And they overlaid Julie Andrews' voice on top of it for part of the song. Oh, man.
It's bringing tears to my eyes just thinking about it.
It hurts in a good way.
Like that from that moment until the end of the episode, there wasn't a time I didn't have tears in my eyes. The episode is just so nostalgic and so emotional. Richard Sherman talking. Here I go. Richard Sherman saying that like he is the only person that's ever allowed to play the piano in Walt's office. And then just watching him play it and sing Feed the Birds, which was Walt's favorite song. And then picking up that snow globe was just, if you're a Disney fan, like there's no way that's not going to like make you cry.
Mm-hmm. I was also delighted to see Jason Schwartzman in the episode. Yes. I was like, what are you doing here?
That's one of the cool things about this show is like practically each episode has a special guest that you're not expecting. I love that they brought Jason Schwartzman. And for those who don't know, Jason Schwartzman played Richard Sherman in Saving Mr. Banks. So the fact that they had him there with Richard Sherman in Walt's office was a really cool little touch to that moment. God, yeah, that was just I follow Dan Lanigan, the host of the show, on Twitter, and he mentioned that, you know, when they were filming that and Richard grabbed the snow globe, everyone kind of clenched like, please don't drop it.
There were a couple instances in the series overall where some of the guests will just grab things with no gloves on and like I clench because I'm like, oh, God, especially the Tron stuff, because that stuff's falling apart.
Yeah, no, exactly. But at the same time, you're like, you know what? Yeah, you deserve to still touch this because like you spent so much time on working on these movies. So there were two, not including Richard Sherman's moment. There were three moments in the Mary Poppins episode that really hit me hard. The second moment would be when they reunite, I believe it was the costume designer with Mary's costume. Because he and Julie Andrews were once married. So it was like bringing back memories of a better time and being together. And he hugged the costume and started crying. And I started crying.
It was so sweet and like, so like sad at the same time.
Yeah.
And those pictures of Julie with their baby on set, I've never seen those before.
I never have either.
And it was, I just remember one where she's like sitting and baby Emma's like in her lap, but she's got like the Mary garb on. And I was like, that is like so perfect. Such a nice photo.
Yes. And then I think this is one of the last parts of the episode, but they, and forgive me, I cannot for the life of me remember this actress's name.
Is it Jane Banks?
Yeah, the one who played Jane.
I don't know her name either.
If you want to look it up. So they took her to the carousel at Griffith Park in California, the same carousel that Walt would sit at on the bench outside, watch his daughters ride, and came up with the idea of Disneyland.
Her name is Karen Dotrice.
Karen, yes. So they reunited her with her character's costume, with Jane Banks's costume, and just like the emotion on her face, seeing it again, was just so heartwarming. And having them be at such, sitting on a bench that was so important to the Disney legacy.
You could tell that she had no idea what they brought to show her, because the shock on her face spoke thousands of words. She was so overcome with emotion, because like that is something that she wore so many years ago and was a part of her, and that character is part of her. I can't imagine what she had to have been feeling to see the dress and the hat all together again.
I mean, I know what I was feeling. I was feeling just like heartbroken, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, and that was just the first episode of this dang show.
Yeah, they really did not pull punches with that first episode to get you attached to the whole concept of the thing.
Right. No, exactly. So episode two would be Tron. Now, Tron was not really a big part of my childhood growing up. It came out in the 80s, and I was born in 86, but I never saw it as a kid. I didn't really see Tron for the first time until Tron Legacy came out. So this was not something I grew up with, but I do understand and appreciate how important Tron was in the history of cinema, because it was the first one that ever really dealt with computer-generated imagery.
And the rotoscoping that they said they had, like, tons and tons. I can't remember the exact number. It was, like, around 53 or something, 53 tons of film strips that they had to go in and individually color grade and everything. And that's why they never made a movie like that again.
I mean, yeah, it's the amount of work that went into this film.
And the fact that they had more than I expected saved. Because that this movie was made at a time where they weren't really trying to catalog and preserve things. So the fact that they had anything at all really was surprising to me. And they mentioned Tron Legacy, which I was pleasantly surprised by.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of hoping for like a Jeff Daniels. Or not Jeff Daniels. Jeff Bridges thing. Sorry, I got them mixed up for some reason. Jeff Bridges cameo. But we did get to see Bruce Boxleiter, who played Tron. In the original and in the Legacy.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping Jeff Bridges would show up and just be like cool, nonchalant and everything, but it was cool to see how kind of the legacy of the thing, because I never really saw Tron. My first encounter with it was playing Kingdom Hearts 2. So that was my first exposure to Tron. And then I didn't see Tron Legacy until like 3 weeks ago. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the, some of my favorite aspects of this show, and there are many, and on top of like the, you know, costume reunions and proper units that they're doing, I love the fact that some of the episodes deal with restoring props. So Tron starts and ends with them start going about to restore the Flynn's Arcade neon sign, which I think is awesome, because the archives, they have all these props, but some of them are worse for wear and they've been run down, and the archives are allowing them to be able to go in and restore them to their former glory so they can present them in museums and exhibits and things like that, which I think to show that process is really, really cool.
I couldn't believe how big it was.
Right.
That thing was huge.
And then another part that I was not expecting to see, he took this one prop to an auctioneer to take a look at it because it was getting ready to go up for auction, and they were like inspecting it and doing so much like thorough study of it to see which character had this prop, because it was a prop that only two characters use. It's like kind of like a slingshot kind of thing.
Like Scoop Ball, if you guys ever played that as a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they were like showing how they were trying to look and study and see like, okay, the markings, is this person's. So I love just that, the kind of aspect behind the scenes of how those processes work.
And it was exciting to think that like maybe they had Jeff Bridges' Scoop thing on their hands. They couldn't determine whose it was, but just to even see that that aspect of prop collecting and selling kind of illustrated in the show was so interesting and cool. And I can't imagine how much it sold for.
I can't either. And then there's so much we could talk about each episode. We'll try to go through each one pretty quickly, but I love when he went to go visit the guy who directed the movie, and that guy in his warehouse, like in a shed in the back, still has like boxes full of Tron memorabilia from making the movie and all the promotional stuff.
It kind of made me a little nervous that it wasn't like temperature controlled. It was just like in a yurt in his backyard. Right. So it's like so many of the papers are probably wrinkly and all like moisture filled and everything. I was like, that belongs in a museum. The whole show.
Someone in our YouTube chat, Liz, wanted to know what we're talking about. If you're just tuning in, we're doing a deep dive about prop culture on Disney Plus, and we are just now getting to episode number 3, and that deals with Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. So I don't think I've ever admitted this. When I was a kid, this movie scared the bejesus out of me, and I refused to watch it. What? Like, some of the imagery looked horrifying to me and gave me nightmares, literal nightmares. So I never watched this as a kid. I just didn't want to.
I went through a really big Tim Burton phase when I was in high school. So I like consumed everything that he could possibly make. And this was one of my favorites because it's purely just a masterpiece. Every single part of it is perfect.
Yeah. Well, if you would like to talk about this episode, you have more of a knowledge, and since this is one of your favorites, well, what are some of the things you liked about this episode?
I loved that they met with the screenwriter at the WGA archives in Hollywood, and I learned that she only wrote one version of the script. It was just the first draft, and then she turned it in, and that's what they made, which is...
I love... That's rare.
Incredible that she turned it in and Tim Burton was like, I hate it. And then the producers were like, no, this is great. This is wonderful. And getting to see pictures of when they were shooting it and actually see puppets, the animatics themselves that had been preserved since they shot that movie, still in excellent condition. Amazing. I was scared that anyone touched them because they do look like they're falling apart, and there are parts of them that are made of like clay and things. And
well, that was one of the things that I loved learning about and seeing, is they went to visit Danny Elfman, and Danny Elfman still has I believe it was the Sandy Claus figure, and he mentioned that he still every 2 to 3 years restores it to make sure it's still in a good condition and not falling apart.
And Dan has a good amount of them. He has a Sally and a Jack in full condition, made like custom bases for them. It's incredible. And he reunited the Jack with the voice actor for Jack.
Yes.
Which was so emotional. Everyone greets all of these props like old friends. That's like one common thread that I noticed throughout the entire series.
Yeah, he looks like, hello, old friend. Hello, Jack. Good to see you.
It was so sweet. And I loved seeing the prop makers kind of explain how certain things worked, like the spiral hill that is so iconic. Like when you think of Nightmare Before Christmas, you think of Jack and Sally on the hill together at the end, and how the snow worked, the little footprints in it, and the one that uncurls. Incredible. So cool to see how that worked.
Exactly. So that was a really cool process episode as well. I keep opening up the wrong document. Episode number 4 was about Pirates of the Caribbean. And this was a cool one. This one I felt didn't go as much of a deep dive as a lot of the other episodes.
Same.
In terms of like how much they showed.
And what kind of bothered me about this episode is that there are, or were, props at Walt Disney World in Magic Kingdom. There's a good handful of, not necessarily from Black Pearl, but from the trilogy in general, there are props in the Pirates League.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, that's right. You've told me that before. Yeah.
I believe the only Black Pearl prop that I know of that's in there is the dress that Pintel wears in the boat with Rigetti when they're trying to be a distraction.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing from the first film that I can think of off the top of my head that's in there. There is a dress that's modeled to look like Elizabeth's from the first film in the actual boat ride, but I don't know if it's original or not. But they did go to Disneyland, which was cool, and they showed the chest of Aztec gold, and it's real. It's original.
Yeah, I love that fact.
I thought for the longest time they just replicated it because they, when every movie would come out, they would try to update the ride with props and things. And so I figured it was just another replica that they threw in there. But no, it's the real thing. You can actually see the chest at Disneyland.
And when he went to St. Vincent, to the town where they mainly filmed a lot of the town from the first movie, I loved the fact that there's a like a bar or a shop there that has the top of the mast that Johnny Depp was sailed in on at the beginning of the film that was sinking. That's still there in this little bar in this town on St. Vincent's, and they put it in cements because they heard someone talking about stealing it, so they cemented it to make sure it stayed.
I couldn't believe when she said that because I was just picturing in my head someone trying to sneak away with a mast of a ship trying to steal it.
Oh, you know, you just a trench coat, you're good.
Yeah, this episode, it was cool and it was exciting, but I felt like they could have gone further in depth with it. This was one of the episodes that didn't really have any stars from the film.
Right.
So it was fine. I wish that they would have gone a little further in depth with it, or maybe just covered the trilogy, because I don't count the other ones, of the Pirates films.
I love four.
It's fine. I just, the trilogy just seems like complete to me. But they could have covered the trilogy as a whole and probably had more to work with. But it was a fine episode. If you love the Pirates movies, it'll really hit the spot for sure.
Exactly. All right. So episode 5, here we go. This is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. This episode, hands down, is my number one favorite episode of any show on Disney Plus. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I don't think it's a secret to you guys. It's definitely not a secret to anyone that knows me. This film meant a hell of a lot to me growing up. I was obsessed with this film as a kid. Grew up loving it. I remember seeing the props and things from it when I first went to MGM Studios back in the day, back when they had on the backlot tour the Bumblebee you could actually ride on with a blue screen behind you as part of the tour. Of course, the playground. I eventually got to work for a year inside the playground at Hollywood Studios. So Rick Moranis has always been one of my idols, and growing up from this movie, Spaceballs, A Little Shop, I got to play Seymour, my high school production. So he's always been an idol of mine. So this episode I was very much looking forward to watching it when I was binging the show, and man, this is so cool. So we talked about earlier, they were restoring props, and they went about starting and ending this episode restoring the shrinking ray to its original first movie modifications. Because a cool fact that I actually did not know is I knew that there are three Honey movies, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Honey, We Blew Up the Kid, and Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves. Each movie, they used the exact same shrinking ray prop from the first one. They just added modifications to it. So by the time the third movie came around, there were so many new elements added onto it. It really didn't look much like it did in the first movie. So the main focus of this episode was restoring it to its original first movie specifications.
And they did a heck of a job. It was incredible how, I don't remember his name, but the way that he sourced the various parts and went like photo accurate with everything. It looks exactly the same. And half of the stuff they don't even make anymore and haven't made for 30 years. It was incredible.
Yeah, like they really went in depth and showcasing what they're using, how they were able to get it, things that they were making 3D models of and 3D printing, and like replicating the old Sony cam and view lens. And then what was this one thing? The remote that was like from this old 60s like memo machine dictation. That was really, really cool. Like just seeing that and that process, and then going in and seeing a lot of the old claymation models used for Ante and the Scorpion was brought a smile to my face every single time I saw it. Seeing three of the kids from the first movie as grownups reuniting with the last surviving bit of Ante was oddly emotional.
There was one thing I noticed, and they didn't touch on it in the show, but I wonder if they shot it and then just didn't use it. The younger brother, the neighbor brother.
Yes, the one that like becomes best friends with Ante.
I think he brought his hat with him.
Oh no, I didn't even notice that.
Because he had a red like trucker hat clipped to his pants. And I was did he hold on to that? Is that the hat that he wore in the movie? And they never addressed it. He never showed it off or anything. But I was like, he brought that with him, didn't he?
I'm going to have to go back and look at that because, I didn't even notice that.
I think maybe they shot it and just didn't use it because that wasn't a prop that they sourced or actually had in their possession. Maybe he just brought it to be sentimental. But it was weird that I noticed it and I was like, wait a minute.
So here's where we're going to talk a spoiler, because in what was probably the most shocking moment of this episode, they got Rick Moranis.
I was floored. I looked back at Josh because we were like eating dinner while we were watching, and we both just like mouths agape, like eyes wide. Oh my God.
Like, if you don't know, of course, Rick Moranis kind of went into semi-retirement back in the late 90s because actually Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves was his last live action film. Unfortunately, his wife had passed away, so he stepped away from acting to be able to be a full-time parent and raise his kids, which is I respect him for doing that. That's great. And he did voice work every now and then. Like, he played one of the moose in the Two Brother Bear films. But he's been very picky about what he chooses to do and appear in. Like, he still says he wants to be an actor. He will be glad to accept things if they're the right fit. And he's done interviews every now and then where he talks about this kind of thing. So it's very rare to see a Rick Moranis sighting these days. So the fact that we got to see him in this episode talking about Honey and like reuniting with the glasses that he wore and the calculator watch and talking stories about making the film was such a delight and such an amazing surprise.
And then it made me wonder about how they're rebooting the series and how he's supposed to be in it. And I was like, they got him to agree to this too, didn't they?
I have to imagine his involvement with this show has to somehow be connected to his involvement with the Shrunk, with the reboot sequel that they're doing, because you listen to the interview he does in this show, and he has so many good things to say about his time in the movie and working with Joe Johnston, who directed the movie, and Joe Johnston is coming back to direct the new movie. So I have to imagine that his friendship with Joe, it's probably helped him, you know, say yes to coming back and being part of the reboot, which I cannot wait. I think that's going to be such a good film. They're going to have the same director, Rick Moranis back. It's got a lot of potential. I cannot wait for that. And it's probably one of the reasons why they're also redid the Shrinking Machine, because they're probably going to reuse that Shrinking Machine in the new movie.
I wouldn't doubt it. I love Joe Johnston's body of work. I wish he would do more movies, but I'm excited that he's coming back for this reboot. He also did The Rocketeer.
Yeah, Rocketeer. He did Captain America, the first Avenger.
I hope we do a Rocketeer episode next season. Just saying.
Oh my god, that would be amazing. And Joe Johnson actually appeared in this episode as well, taking a closer look at the shrink ray. So all in all, like this whole episode was just a delight, a smile from ear to ear the entire time. Like this episode will be something that I will go back and rewatch a lot. That is for sure. All right, so we'll kind of breeze through the rest here because we're talking a lot here. This next one, episode 6 is The Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I have no real attachment to this movie.
Me neither. I went and saw it on like AR trips in school, but that was kind of...
It was cool, you know, it's cool just to see everything. And I loved seeing the reunion of the kids with their costumes because the one girl who played the youngest girl in the movie was so excited to see her costume again. That was so fun.
That was probably the only part of the episode that I really enjoyed. The rest of it was kind of a snooze for me, but I have no real attachment to those films. So
exactly. Episode 7, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Another classic that I grew up loving and watching. This was a good episode.
First of all, I didn't know that. Gosh, what's his name? Bob Hoskins.
Yeah, Bob Hoskins.
I didn't know he was British, so we had a British reveal.
I mean, I've known for a few years now, but when I first found out, I was like, wait, really?
Because they had that BTS footage of him talking about the voice actor for Roger, who was on set dressed up, apparently, which was another shocking thing to me.
Charles Fleischer, yes.
And I was just like, what? He's British?
Because you think of him, you know, as Eddie Valiant and as Mario, like the roles that we know and love him for are very American accent roles. And, you know, it's just like Tom Holland.
If
you didn't know, that's crazy to think.
But that episode taught me so much about Who Framed Roger Rabbit that I had no idea about. I didn't know about the costume thing on the set. And honestly, this movie, like Nightmare Before Christmas scared you. This scared me.
Oh my God, Judge Doom. Yes.
Oh my God. I had nightmares of this as a child, but it sucked because I love the movie.
Yeah, seeing Christopher Lloyd with the costume again, and you could just immediately, you could see him go right back into character.
That like, face that he makes where he's like,
mm-hmm.
I lost it.
And I love the fact that they go and get a shave and a haircut. Two bits. I love it. See, you can't do it and not finish it. It's just like Roger. I don't think they talked about it in the episode, but I saw Christopher Lloyd do like a Twitter Q&A on the Disney Plus Twitter about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And one of the cool facts that I love is that he does not blink once in the film.
What?
If you go back and watch him as Judge Doom, you will never see him blink. And that was a decision by Christopher Lloyd because he's secretly a toon. Toons don't need to blink and rewater their eyes. So the whole movie, he does not blink once.
That's like how the cape thing, which I didn't know, and I learned from this episode where they had like a mini fan blowing his cape at all times to kind of mm-hmm. give him that toon-like aspect to him.
Mm-hmm. There's so many like layers in this movie. It's just learning about them are so cool. And Charles Fleischer is such a ham. And he is still very much Roger today as he was back then.
I learned that he's on Cameo after this episode because Josh was like, he's on Cameo. I was like, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas then.
We years ago, I think in 2013, you can go back in our archive on YouTube of our show episodes of the Attraction Show. Gene Lynn and I actually got to interview him over the phone to promote like a Blu-ray release of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And yeah, he's so animated in real life and fun. I love that man so much.
The whole auctioneer bit thing that he did, I was like, what is going on? They're just letting this man do whatever he wants.
Exactly.
I lost it. I was just like, I'm just going to let this roll over me and just accept what's happening right now. that was a great episode.
Yeah. And then finally, the eighth and final episode of the first season is all about the Muppet movie, the original Muppet movie. which was that was a so much fun to see. I was not expecting to see Joel from Mystery Science Theater pop up for seconds there to go see the car. So that was a cool thing to see him getting to interview Gonzo.
Was my other shocking thing, because Gonzo is Josh's favorite Muppet, so he's very, very attached to Gonzo. And when, what's his name? The host.
Gold.
It just left me.
Dan Lanigan.
Dan Lanigan. When Dan went to go talk to him, he was like, I have a very special guest. I thought he was going to talk to Dave and not Gonzo. So when Gonzo like walked up, I like looked back at Josh and he was like, like a child's joy on his face, and it was such a delightful interview, and it made me think about how much I miss the Muppets and how I wish Disney would do something with them.
Right. Anything. I think my favorite I laughed so hard at this. I think my favorite moment was when Dan asked Gonzo, was like, what does seeing this costume mean to you all these years later? And Gonzo's like, nothing, it's just a piece of wardrobe.
I laughed.
It was clothing.
It's just clothes.
The complete opposite of the Mary Poppins episode.
It was so good. The Muppets are so funny and so just perfect at everything. And man, I really hope that episode gets people riled up and talking about the Muppets again, so Disney will give the Muppets Live Again or whatever that show was that Josh Gad was working on another shot.
Yep. I would love to see that. And of course, like anytime they talk about Jim Henson and show behind the scenes and talk about his process, it's always a welcome. I love more about him.
Also, Drew Struzan was in this episode. Wild, but so cool to see his original pieces. I didn't know that he kept the originals out of all of his
works. I didn't know that either. It's just so cool because if you don't know who Drew Struzan is, like if you love movie posters, like if you think about like art posters that look like pieces of art, if you think about your top five, guaranteed five are by Drew. He's done so many great posters.
I mean, he did the Muppet movie, Back to the Future, Star Wars. Literally any major motion picture that you can think of that had really cool cinematic poster art, he probably did it.
And he did one piece. He only did one piece for the new trilogy of Star Wars, and that was a poster that they gave out at D23 Expo in 2015. It was the only piece of art by Drew done for any of the new trilogy films.
Do you have it?
I did not. I was not at the panel, and I did not receive it.
No.
I know. I was heartbroken.
I would love to see him do like a full Skywalker saga piece. I think that would be neat.
Oh, I mean, he's still doing stuff. So yeah, we'll get him up on the phone tomorrow.
I think he was at something that I went to here. It might have been MondoCon or something, the poster convention that's here. Because I remember he was signing for something and Josh wanted to get him to sign something, but it was expensive. I can't remember. It might have been MegaCon in Orlando. I can't remember. I just remember him being there and the line to get him to sign stuff was miles and miles long.
Not surprised. So that's Prop Culture, the first season of Prop Culture. Hopefully the first of many seasons. This definitely feels like a show that they could very easily do more episodes of in the future. So here's hoping, you know, tweet at Disney Plus, let them know how much you love the show, because it is really honestly the best reality unscripted show Disney Plus has to offer currently. Wholeheartedly agree. Suggest everyone go check it out.
I'm sad that it's only 8 episodes.
Yeah. We need more, especially when they're only like 30 minutes a piece. Like you want more.
And another thing, I was going to say, okay. Another thing it made me want was like a full scale, like, you know how the Academy is doing a film museum in LA? I want a Walt Disney Archives museum. I know they do exhibits like at Bowers and stuff like that, but I want a full Walt Disney Archives museum.
Yeah, they're currently doing a tour right now. It's at Bowers. I think it's going to go somewhere else fairly soon. You can catch it on a past episode of the show from a few weeks ago. We actually have the Shrinking Ray as our email for it. If you want to see what's on display for that, I suggest it. All right, so at this point, we're going to do some Q&A. So for those of you that are in our YouTube live chats, if you have any questions, let us know right now. We're already almost an hour and a half, so we're going to wrap this up pretty quickly. So we'll answer one or two questions. But while we're waiting for your questions, let's do some quick shout-outs of our brand-new Club and VIP subscribers. So if you didn't know, we have a subscription plan at attractionsmagazine.com with three levels. And depending on which levels that you subscribe for, you can get every issue of our magazine in digital form. You could even get exclusive mystery merch boxes four times a year with your magazine. So for our brand new Club and VIP subscribers, shout out to Terry. I really am sorry if I mispronounced your name, Larry. Paulette Edwards, Alyssa Pappas, or Papa, Deborah Sievers, and Margaret Shaw. Thank you guys so much for being subscribers to us here at Attractions Magazine.
Yes, all of your support is deeply valued and appreciated, and we hope you like what we're doing.
Exactly. Michael mentioned in the chat here, and I didn't know this, Charles Fleischer was in Back to the Future Part 2.
I didn't know that either.
I have to look that up. I can't for the life of me remember who he played in that movie. DJ, yes, Disney Plus was supposed to do a Muppet show. That one you're with, Dad?
No, that one he's talking about, it's like Muppets something. It's short form, so it'll be like 5 to 8 minutes long every episode, and they're unscripted. I don't really know. Yeah. So the show that Josh Gad was working on was called The Muppets Live Again or something like that. And it was supposed to take place after Muppets Take Manhattan, but it was scripted and storylined, and it never happened.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, I think they just passed on it, or they couldn't. There was creative differences or something. You can guess. But the short form series, as far as I know, is still in development, still happening. But
I feel like that's something that they could easily do, especially with all the quarantine right now. You just have the, you know, Muppeteers set up a camera and on a green screen, and you can easily, because I think they literally did just that. Did with Fraggle Rock.
Yep, they literally brought Fraggle Rock. I can't say it. Shooting it at home on iPhones with green screens. Yeah.
So they could easily do something like that with the Muppets right now for Disney Plus. So I feel like if they're going to, now's the time to strike while the iron's hot.
I wish they would do something with the Muppets because they're so underutilized by Disney as a whole. So seeing this episode really kind of makes me hope that they'll come back in some capacity. People are loud enough about it.
Exactly. Who knows what the future will see, but I'm sure there's going to be a lot to do to watch on Disney Plus very soon. All right. Well, at this point, it is to say goodbye to our family. Brittany, everyone find you on the interwebs.
You can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE. Yes, it's spelled funny on Twitter and Instagram and twitch.tv/BritPlays with 3 T's.
Yes. Are you going to be doing any streaming this week?
I'm having some issues with my streaming, technological based. But since we're in quarantine and stuff, I can't get any friends that stream to come over and look at it. So for the foreseeable future, I don't think I'm going to announce streams. If I can get it to work, I'm just going to do it. So follow me on Twitter, because if I happen to get it to work and go live, you'll see me tweet a link.
There we go. You can find Twitter at Bangsley, on Instagram at Disney Goofball. Of course, Attractions on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and attractionsmagazine.com. So that's going to do it this week. Hope you enjoyed our deep dive into pop culture. Be sure to check that out on Disney Plus whenever you would like. And we will see you guys next week. If you are listening to the audio version of the podcast, be sure to tune in Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on our YouTube channel to see a live stream of us recording the episodes and interact with us as well.
Thank you so much for listening. But until next time, wash your hands, stay inside, wear your mask, play some games.
And, of course, have fun.
Bye, everyone. Bye, everybody.